Hey Watchers, today's episode brings you the granddaddy of all comic book hero movies. Featuring an all-star cast and crew, this film started a genre that is now considered a pop culture cash cow. This episode also features special guest Dash Hooper, host of the YouTube channel A Dash of Life. So put down that kryptonite and tie on that red cape, cause it's time for 1978 superhero adventure film, Superman the Movie. Welcome to the Midnight Watch Podcast, the show where we discuss classic, cult, and modern classic movies.
We're your hosts, Jeremy and Josh Baruto, and we review movies that are at least 10 years old. Fair warning, we're big on spoilers here, straight from the get-go.
We rate these movies in four categories. Number one, the level of impact and success it had when it was released. Number two, how relevant is it today? Number three, our own personal enjoyment of this movie. And number four, is it a Midnight Watch?
What is a Midnight Watch? It's a film which completely captures your attention, drawing you in. No matter what time or what part you start watching the movie, you have to finish it.
Well, welcome, Dash, to the Midnight Watch podcast after my computer crashed three times, and hopefully this time it'll stay on. Thanks for joining me. My brother, unfortunately, couldn't be on this episode. Working with his family right now, so he's unavailable. He might be unavailable for the next couple episodes, but we're going to go ahead and keep trucking through. Today, we're reviewing Superman the movie from 1978. Yes, can't forget that. So, Dash, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I spent 23 years in the Air Force as a security forces policeman. Spent a lot of time overseas, more than I did here stateside. Finally retired, worked in a bookstore for a while, retired from that. Now I'm a stay-at-home dad, running my own YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Called A Dash of Life. It's basically a talk show where I just, this pandemic hit me really hard because I am so extroverted that I have to have contact with people in some way, in shape and form. So I started my own YouTube channel to be able to talk to my friend. Everybody does amazing stuff. I mean, you're doing amazing stuff with your podcast here as well. So it's fun to talk to people. I've got friends that have written books. I've got friends that have, you know, started their own businesses. So I wanted my other friends,
yeah,
to see the good stuff that they've got to do. So it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I think it's awesome. That is one thing the pandemic has done that's good, is that people can only watch so much Netflix before they were like, I need to do something. And then like this creativity started to spill out. And thankfully, like my show's still been going. Your show's been going. Yeah. Hopefully it goes for a long time, man.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
I told my wife, I said, I'm not in for thousands of followers. I'm just in it for just to have fun. And you're right, man. The creativity that people have come up with is pretty astounding.
It really is. Yeah. Like you and me met when we both were working at Half Price Books, and worked there for what? Like, I think 6 months before I ended up leaving, something like that.
I think it was close 6 months to a year. I believe it was pretty close to. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense if it was close like that. My dog's running around. So you just hear like the
That's my favorite noise, is the nails on the hardwood floor.
It's nice until Harper's trying to sleep, and then we're like yelling at the dog, like, don't walk or anything like that. And the dog's like, yeah, I'm just trying to be a dog. We worked together for probably 6 months to a year, something like that. And then I couldn't work with you anymore because you're just too damn sexy. So
it's the gray beard that keeps people
intrigued. So I kind of picked Superman because I know that you are a massive Superman fan. Like, oh, yeah. I know you can't see, but right now, like, there is a ton of Superman memorabilia behind Dash, like all over the wall. You've got Superman tattoos. You've got, yeah. So tell us just a little bit, like, what Superman means to you. So, because, like, for me, I like Superman, but mm-hmm. it's not like my favorite of favorites. And for you, I think it is, right?
Oh yeah. It's definitely a favorite. It all started with this movie that we're getting ready to talk about. I had just turned 5 years old when this movie had hit the big screen.
Really?
So
okay.
This is one of the very first movies that I can remember.
Yeah.
And, so my dad and my mom took me to the movies and to see, you know, I remembered seeing cartoons and things, you know, you had the Super Friends and Superman animated shows on cartoons on Saturdays. But
yeah,
now you're getting the big, you're getting to what, you know, a 5-year-old thinks is real life.
Did you ever watch the TV show with George Reeves before you saw the
yes.
movie?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
That was my grandmother and my favorite. When I went to go to West Virginia, she knew to have a Superman on during the day.
That's
George
awesome.
Reeves, man, just I loved it. But to see Christopher Reeve take over Clark Kent and Kal-El and Superman, and to see him live on screen, and to see the epitome of what most people thought Superman should be like. I mean, Christopher Reeve nailed it, and so to me, that was there right there. And then my dad went out and bought a, they weren't called big heads at the time. You know what the big heads are, those big wall. So this thing was, you could hang it on the wall. It was life size. And I put it in my room. And from that moment on, and from that movie on, I was wearing I could find any towel of my mom's good towels, the red towels.
Yeah.
Put them around my neck, flying around the neighborhood. Occasionally jumping off the roof of the house, pretending
occasionally
never hurt myself, but my mom would tell you different, but, no, just man, that I think it's this movie I just wrote a book about this as well, which is kind of, I'm not trying to pitch this book or anything.
No, but, yeah. Go plug away.
But I wrote a book called Why I Love Superman and Other Superheroes. And majority of this book is about the movie and quotes that come from Christopher Reeve and comic books of Superman and other superheroes of how it helped me. I don't want to say it directed my life a little bit better by living because obviously being deployed and living with PTSD.
Yeah.
You find ways to help yourself. And my doctor would always say, write down things that mean something to you to help you get through it. And that was part of what it did. And so I would write these quotes down. And so I just put some of the quotes that I had written in my book that I'd written down on notepads and notebooks that I got tons of. And I put it in together into a book. But long story short, it was this movie that really garnered what I love about Superman. And you know, he's a hero for all, not just the United States, not just Krypton. He's a hero for all. He's a hero for everybody. And I think that's why I like him so much, is because, you know, yeah, he's over time, he's been super, you know, souped up a lot and
repowered
and repowered, but overall his main mission, you know, he wants to live, you know, he's an alien, but he wants to live a human life.
Right.
Hence
right.
Clark Kent, you know, his alter ego is Clark Kent. You know, I mean, that's, he was always Superman, but he hid as Clark Kent and to be it, cause he wanted to be human. And I feel that, you know, and to be able to go out and save people and at the, in the nick of time is fantastic to me.
Yeah.
He could just have the super strength and flight, and I would still be just as happy with the Superman character than all those other powers that he has. So I think that's mostly why I fell in love with Superman.
Well, that's cool. I didn't realize that I knew this movie was big to you just because of Superman and the fact that it's, I mean, by itself in the history of cinema, it's like a staple. It's like a Star Wars movie where it's like there was before Superman and there's after. Yeah. Like if anybody likes superhero movies, I was talking to my brother about this, and I think now watching the movie now, like I wish my brother brought this up, and we weren't allowed to watch hardly anything growing up. And so this movie though, it's pretty freaking clean. And so I don't know why we weren't allowed to watch this. My brother was saying this too, like, we would have loved this movie though if we were grew up watching it. And so watching it now, like if you watch all the new Marvel movies and of course, you know, Justice League and stuff, those are all action packed. But if you're a fan of the, like really a fan of superhero movies, you have to see this movie. Like this is like way up there, probably number one on the list, because it's the one the first one I think where people started, they took superheroes seriously in a movie. But then also too in cinema, just like this was the most expensive movie ever made at the time when it came out. It was like $55 million. Yeah. And yeah, big deal right there. And it's just funny, like, that's why Warner Brothers is never going to let go DC, just because they make so much money off of it.
There's going to be people that complain about, you know, you have the Marvel fans, you have the DC fans. I to this day, even at 48 years old, I still can't figure out why there's a split.
Right, right.
In a superhero. I get it. They all do something different. But the best thing about this movie to me, even growing up and to now, is what they did with what they had. And there was very little what you would call CGI, obviously. A lot of it was green screen and or special effects at the time.
Right.
And, you know, the hardest thing, some of the things that I remember in them talking about was, how are we going to get him to fly?
Right.
That was, you know, other than that, everything fit perfect. You know, you had Superman 1, Superman 2, you know, up to 3 and 4. You didn't have anything for a while. And then, bam, 1989, Batman, you know, Michael Keaton. Here starts this a whole new wave coming. I mean, this is, and like you said, this is, to me, is the epitome of what a superhero film is.
You know, I just thought about this. So, you know, obviously, you know, in with Superman, they have the golden age, the bronze, silver age, and all that. I would say that this is the golden age of superhero movies. Like, this is the first one that set the standard for it. Because I know they've had serials, they had the TV shows and the cartoons. And I think I was researching, they even had like a Superman versus the Mole Men, which is like a TV movie, something like that. And so I would say this is the golden age for superhero movies, where it's not taken as seriously as like now. You've got Man of Steel, of course, and you know, all the Marvel movies, which is interesting. I agree. I used to compare like this DC or Marvel, but I mean, they're all great. Like, they all got their spots, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And to piggyback on what you said there, absolutely. Think of Star Wars. They went in with Star Wars thinking this was just going to be a one-time thing, you know, a space opera, if you will. And here we go. We're creating Superman just right. I mean, literally right behind Star Wars.
Right.
Well, like they're thinking this is not going to be, but Richard Donner nailed it. You know, there was a lot of infighting between the producers and the director and things, and hence why you get a little bit of a different director in Superman 2 and 3 and 4. Richard Donner will always be the man who created the superhero film to me.
That's a very valid point. And I mean, Richard Donner, let's face it, more than half of his movies are bangers. Like, they're awesome films. I mean, you got The Goonies, you got Lethal Weapon, all these classics that you don't think of when, for an average moviegoer, they don't know who Richard Donner is. Right. But if you get into films, you were like, I like that movie. Oh, I like that movie. I like that movie. And yeah, it's funny, for this movie, they tried to tap Steven Spielberg for this. They tried to tap George Lucas for this. And this is all, that's before George Lucas hit it big with Star Wars. So I think they totally found the perfect person. I agree, for Richard Donner. Perfect. Well, I got to jump back real quick, get some of this intro stuff out. So we kind of just dive right into it. I'm excited. I love your enthusiasm about this. Okay. So this is 1978. This is Superman the movie, not just Superman, because it's like, I love how you tell people this is the movie, like that's part of the name. Directed by Richard Donner, story by Mario Puzo. I was surprised when I found that out. He was the writer of The Godfather.
Did that not just throw you for a loop when the creator of The Godfather throwing out Superman?
Wrote the story for Superman. Then the screenplay by Mario Puzo, David and Leslie Newman, and Robert Benton. The score by John Williams. My brother wanted to point out as well, I think, all of us immediate,
amazing score. Like, as soon as that, like, wait, I gotta stop. We gotta go through this stuff first and we'll dive into it. Let's see. The budget was $55 million, and then the box office was $300 million. $300 million in 1978. Like, that's insane.
That's gotta be a billion. That's gotta be a billion.
Right. For inflation.
A billion. Yeah, a billion in 2021 at least.
Yeah. Because I mean, now if you break 300 million, then you're like, now you're like, okay, yeah, that's good. That's really good. So back then,
yeah,
I think that was the most successful Superman movie still to this day. It's starring Christopher Reeve,
Margot Kidder.
Always horrible with names, man. Like, I just bad. Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman, Ned Beatty, Valerie Perrine, Glenn Ford, Mark McClure, and who could forget Terrence Stamp, man? Like, Neil before Zod.
Neil before Zod.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. You already kind of said a little bit about how, where you saw it first. You were 5 years old. You said your dad went to go take you in the theaters.
Yeah, dad took me to the movie theaters here in Oklahoma City. Back then, we didn't have all these awesome quadruplex and dodecahedron plexes, and so it was you got in, you got into the movie, you got in, and you waited, you know, we waited in line for a good minute to get into this movie, but it was, you know, obviously worth it.
Dude, I remember that. Like, I think the longest time I waited in line was to go see Star Wars Episode 3, and it was like 2.5 hours, and that's not that long. I know for some people that camped out like days to see a movie, but I kind of missed that almost. I mean, not really, because I have a kid, so I don't have the time to do that, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It's definitely an experience, because we did it for Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, nice.
No, excuse me. We did it for Return of the Jedi. We did it for Return of the Jedi. We stayed out in line and got in line for that very first showing.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's something. I mean, and I don't know, like you said, with all the duplexes and quadplexes, 40 screen theaters that they have now, waiting in line is a rarity. But yeah,
yeah. Like, I think like with Dune when that came out, I literally bought the tickets and then showed up a minute before it started and just went straight to my seat, and we were good. You know, so all right, let me go ahead and I'm gonna run through the plot synopsis. Let's see. On the planet Krypton, Jor-El of the Kryptonian High Council discovers that the planet will be destroyed when it drifts out of orbit towards its red supergiant sun. The other council members dismiss his claims. To save Kal-El, his infant son, Jor-El sends him in a spaceship to Earth, where his dense molecular structure will give him superhuman strength and other powers. Krypton, thereafter, is destroyed. The ship lands near Smallville, Kansas. Kal-El, now 3 years old, 3 Earth years old, is found by Jonathan and Martha Kent, who are astonished when he lifts their truck. They decide to raise him as their own, naming him Clark after Martha's maiden name. Jonathan tells the boy that he must have been sent to Earth for a reason. After Jonathan's death from a heart attack, 18-year-old Clark hears a psychic call and discovers a glowing green crystal in the remains of his spacecraft. It compels him to travel to the Arctic, where a fortress of solitude resembling the architecture of Krypton emerges from the ice. That was a freaking legit scene from the movie, by the way. Yeah. Still awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Inside, a hologram of Jor-El explains Clark's true origins, and after 12 years of educating him on his reason for being sent to Earth and his powers, he leaves the fortress wearing a blue and red suit with a red cape and the House of El family crest emblazoned on his chest. Becoming a reporter at the Daily Planet in Metropolis, Clark meets and develops a romantic attraction to co-worker Lois Lane. Lois is involved in a helicopter mishap. Clark publicly uses his powers for the first time to save her, astonishing the crowd below. He then thwarts a jewel thief attempting to scale the Solo building, captures robbers fleeing police, and depositing their getaway cabin cruiser on Wall Street. Rescues a girl's cat from the tree. That's the Boy Scout thing right there.
Right there, the big boob Boy Scout.
And saves Air Force One after a lightning strike destroys an engine. The Caped Wonder, an instant celebrity, visits Lois at her penthouse apartment the next night and takes her for a flight, allowing her to interview him for an article in which she names him Superman. Meanwhile, criminal genius Lex Luthor learns of a joint U.S. Army and U.S. Navy nuclear missile test. He buys hundreds of acres of worthless desert land and reprograms one of the two missiles to detonate in the San Andreas Fault. Knowing Superman could stop his plan, Lex deduces that a recently discovered meteorite is from Krypton and is radioactive to Superman. After he and his accomplices, Otis and Eve Tessmacher, receive a piece of it, Luther lures Superman to his underground lair and reveals his plan to cause everything west of the San Andreas Fault to sink into the Pacific Ocean, leaving Luther's desert island as the new west coast of the United States. I was a fan of Otisville or something like that, you know?
Otisville. Like, Otisville.
I would move there. Luther then exposes him to the meteor piece's mineral kryptonite, which weakens Superman greatly as Luther taunts him about the second missile, which is headed east towards the random target of Hackensack, New Jersey. Miss Tessmacher is horrified that Luther does not care that her mother lives in Hackensack. Luther leaves Superman to die. Knowing that he always keeps his word, Tessmacher helps Superman on the condition he would stop the eastbound missile first. After being freed, Superman diverts the eastbound missile into outer space, consequently preventing him from reaching the westbound missile before it explodes in the San Andreas Fault. Massive earthquakes erupt across California, damaging the Golden Gate Bridge and breaching the Hoover Dam. Superman migrates. Yeah, maybe he does some of that too.
He probably does every once in a while.
Right. The effects of the explosion by sealing the fault line. While Superman is busy saving others, Lois's car falls into a crevice from one of the aftershocks, trapping her as it fills with dirt and debris. She suffocates before Superman can reach her. Angered over failing to save her, Superman defies Jor-El's earlier warning not to manipulate human history and instead heeds Jonathan's advice that he must be there for a reason. He accelerates around Earth, traveling several minutes back in time to prevent Lois's death while also undoing the damage caused by the missile and the earthquake. After saving the West Coast, Superman delivers Luther and Otis to prison before flying into the sunrise for further adventures. Well, I got to give props to my brother for reading those synopsis. Man, that's a lot of information. Yes, it is. Let's see here. I wanted to bring up some things that my brother, him and I were talking a little bit this morning, and so he wanted to have his thoughts on it. You already brought this up. Excuse me. You already brought this up, but we both agree that Christopher Reeve was like fantastically cast, not just as Superman, but totally two different characters with Clark Kent and Superman. It wasn't just to put the glasses on and, oh, nobody recognizes him. Like the fact that he stooped over, just different personality. Fantastic. That was awesome. I guess there's a new episode in the 911 show. Have you seen that show?
I have not seen 911.
I guess there's a new show where like they have to rescue a helicopter off of the top. And my brother said it's like almost shot for shot from the Superman movie. So because Richard Donner, the director, passed away this year, I'm wondering if that might have been an homage.
Probably an homage. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, also Marlon Brando as a person seems to be kind of a terrible person in real life. So good actor, but yeah, terrible person. And then, Gene Hackman, my brother really likes his acting a lot, even though we've heard that he's really hard to work with in real life too, even though he hasn't been in anything for a while.
He kind of fell off the spectrum there as far as acting goes.
Yeah.
On Gene Hackman, totally agree. Listen, this is the first time that they took the Lex Luthor, that Superboy and the Golden Age and the Superman had grown up with being a evil scientist, making him the crooked businessman that we know him as today.
Right.
So it was, they had just, if I recall correctly, they had just started putting him in as a businessman when they rebooted for the Silver Age, which is kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The 70s and the 80s Superman. So it was good to see because like, you didn't want to see some scientist that was happy and go lucky and best friends with Superman, then lose his hair because of an accident. And then that's why he's mad at Superman. You want him to be a crooked,
right?
A crooked businessman, a crooked politician, whatever the case may be, to be thwarted by the goody goody big blue boy scout. So yes, Hackman,
right,
is the, again, because of this being the very first movie, you have a standard to follow. And that's what all these Lex Luthors have to live up to. is the Gene Hackman Lex Luthor, and nailed it spot on. I mean,
you brought that up, that like it's the Lex Luthor from the golden age, not because like nowadays, like I'm watching this nowadays, when the first time I saw this, I think it had to be like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that. I went through a huge watching a ton of movies at one period of my life when I was around 19. I think I went through all four of them real quick. Watching it now, knowing more about the character and stuff, I was like, man, they really messed up Lex Luthor's character. And then doing a little bit of research, and it's like, oh, it's actually spot on from at the time. Yeah, he's not what we know of him now. I thought that was pretty interesting. Oh, you probably know a ton about this movie, but like you brought it up a little bit earlier, that there is a lot of drama behind this movie too. The producers got to a point where Richard Donner and them weren't even talking. Richard Lester, who became the director of the second movie, was the go-between, and they never officially gave Richard Donner a budget, and then never officially gave him a shooting schedule, and that's why he was eventually fired while he was filming Superman 2. But yeah, that alone, and then Gene Hackman refused to shave his mustache for the movie.
His mustache,
until Richard Donner was like, "I'll shave my mustache if you do," and so he was like, "Okay." And then Richard Donner turns out didn't have a mustache. He had a fake mustache that he wore to that meeting. So he just took it off. And then Gene Hackman didn't want to shave his head, or didn't want to do a skull cap or anything like that. And so he ended up doing that. And he thought that he was going to retire after this, just because he was so embarrassed by it, even though he did admit in later articles that he actually did enjoy doing it. But my brother and I, we talked about this a little bit, and I think it's, nowadays, like you've got Henry Cavill, who's a huge nerd and like respects so much of the stuff, like how he goes with The Witcher. He's just, my brother's saying like he's 100% in, huge fan of The Witcher. So he really respects the source material. And back at that time, I think people were more concerned with the actors and the actresses instead of the stories when they were making the movie. So like Marlon Brando, I mean, notoriously lazy, like was telling Richard Donner, he's like, why don't you just film like a green bagel and then I'll voice over, because we don't know what Kryptonians look like, just because he didn't want to work. And so the fact that he got paid, what, a cool $14 million for like three minutes of footage or whatever. Like, yeah, it's kind of tough there. But that's, now it's totally different. People go see movies because of franchises, not because of actors now. Which is,
agree.
It's kind of sad at one point, because it's kind of the death of the Hollywood celebrity in a certain stance. Because now people like, I'm going to go see Eternals. I don't know anything about it, and I'm just going to go see it just because it's Marvel. So, which I probably wouldn't watch it if it wasn't part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I don't want to get off track, but the Eternal, you're going to miss, if you don't go see this movie, mm-hmm. you're going to miss a big chunk of why and things happened as they did in the Marvel universe.
Did you already see
Eternals? I do a lot of, like you, I love movies. So I do a lot of research the Eternals, I'm a comic book nerd, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know this by now, I'm a comic book nerd. I don't care if you're a DC or Marvel fan, I'm going to read everything from DC to Image to Black Horse to Top Cow, you name it. There is a comic in my hand. Yeah. And so the Eternals storyline, even though they came, they're only a recent creation, if you will, last 15, 20, 30 years.
Didn't they come out in the 90s or something like that?
Yeah, I want to say it was the 90s, but they are pivotal now as to why Thanos did what he did and who Thanos is.
Okay.
You're going to learn. And so, not to get off of our Superman real quick, but if you don't watch the Eternals, don't listen to, be your own critic, ladies and gentlemen, go watch this movie.
There you go.
Because you're going to get a lot of good backstory. And I think you will thoroughly enjoy this Eternals movie. So please go in with it and love it, because it's going to be a good movie.
Well, that's awesome, man. Wait, by the way, just changing the subject a little bit, I wanted to tell you this on the phone when I talked to you last week, but, when I was watching Dune, you so reminded me of Josh Brolin when he was like running around. I was like, dude, that's Dash. Like, that's Dash right there. Just like leading the charge and stuff. So
my wife says, she goes, she goes, he has so many of your mannerisms. I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I'm trying to be, you know, Duncan. I'm trying to be Duncan Idaho, the cool guy, not, you know. But yeah, Brolin was phenomenal in that movie, and I loved every.
And like, that's only part of it. Can't wait to see what he does in part two. We could get into Dune for quite some time too. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've got a ton of different trivia right here.
Okay.
This movie was released in the year of Superman's 40th anniversary. They were trying to release it originally on the day of the first comic that he appeared in, but there was issues with the shoots, so they had to release it 6 months later. Oh, this is a big deal. Linda Carter played Wonder Woman back in the 80s, said in an interview that when they were Christopher Reeve and her, they were two up-and-coming actors in Hollywood, and she was dealing with Hollywood sexism at the time, that she says that Christopher Reeve was always like super nice to her and that he's just always been that way. From what my brother brought this point up too, is like, from what I've been reading, researching, Christopher Reeve sounded like a genuinely like awesome person in real life.
And that is what I want to get to. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is why he, to me, is and will be one of the greatest Supermans ever. The behind the scenes, every actor and actress that worked with him had nothing but great words to say about him. And he wasn't, I mean, if you go watch, and if you ever get a chance to go watch interviews from before the movie and after the movie, and just up into when he had his accident, you know, he was thrown from his horse.
Right.
Even to that point, he still was a great human being, a great person. And that is what I want in a Superman. In my book, I put that in there as well, is you have the best casting for the best character in the best movie, in my opinion. I mean, they couldn't have gone any better. And so, yeah, man, he's sad that he's gone, but he lives on through me and through my fanboyish nerdiness of Superman. So yeah, man, what a great person Christopher Reeve was.
I'm not a huge fan of Superman compared to my love for other characters, but I do really feel like Christopher Reeve was, he's very charismatic and he's very interesting to watch on screen. Anytime he was on screen, I was not bored. And yeah, I feel like Superman, along with Captain America, could be really easy to get wrong and to be like, oh, that's just the good person. They're just the Boy Scout. And I feel like they handled it really well. And I, unfortunately, like with Henry Cavill, I feel in Man of Steel, and I know you and me got in long talks about Batman versus Superman, but I feel like Henry Cavill has not had an opportunity to really be Clark Kent or Superman. It's like he was either, like in Man of Steel, he was either just like soul searching for the first half of the movie, and then the last half of the movie he was fighting Zod. So you didn't really get to know him. And yeah, I feel like he hasn't had a chance yet to really flesh out the character. Thus, I think Christopher Reeves is the best Superman, personally. And I mean, I hope that they finally give Henry Cavill Man of Steel 2. I don't think they will, but I hope they do. But we'll see. But anyways, that I'm kind of starting to wander off.
Well, and to get on what your brother said about Henry Cavill, is he does, and that's why he and I agree, Christopher Reeve will always be Superman, but Henry Cavill to me is the modern day Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And why I say that is because he did take the source material, he enveloped that role, and you're right, he hasn't had a chance to, because with Christopher Reeve we had 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the majority of it was about him.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying. With Henry Cavill Superman, you had Man of Steel, then you went straight into Batman v Superman, and then you went into Justice League, and then obviously you got the Snyderverse, the Snyder Cut. So it was more wrapped around other characters. I do say that he embodies him, because if you'll notice in Batman versus Superman, even Batman said it there at the end, you know, he's like, he was the hero that we all needed.
Mm-hmm.
And he, that's why he wanted to do the Justice League, to honor Superman. And I think Cavill captured it in the short amount of time. And though I do hope we do get a Man of Steel 2 and maybe some other stuff,
right,
that where we get to where he can live up to and be more like Christopher Reeve. But I think Henry to me. And I'll argue with anybody that wants to come on and argue with me that I think he's probably the second best.
Yeah.
Superman that there is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I liked him. Yeah, absolutely. I think he did a great job. Let's see here. In this movie. You were talking about how flight, that was a big issue with this. And then Christopher Reeve, after he got hired, turns out that he actually flew gliders as a hobby. And so he was able to kind of sell that a little bit better because he knew how to kind of turn and move
the bodies. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's funny that like that last scene in the movie is so iconic with him like rolling in front of the sun. And they tried to mimic that with Man of Steel, which was cool. Let's see. Oh, yeah. This is another thing I thought was really cool. First time in movie history, apparently, that they hired somebody who either wasn't wearing a padded suit or he wasn't already like super ripped like right. Lou Ferrigno. So he got hired. He was too skinny. And then he put on like I think it was his weight was like 175 and he went up to 212 of just pure muscle. Yeah. So, yeah, like that, if somebody bulking up like that, that was the first time somebody did that in a movie for that. That's pretty amazing. Like that just shows already like how much you wanted the role and how much you embodied it.
Agreed.
Oh, this is funny. Tons of people actually, they lobbied for the Superman and Neil Diamond was one out of so many different people. So would you think if they'd be calling him like Sweet Lois Lane instead?
Sweet Superman or Sweet right? Lois, Sweet Lois. Sweet Lois Lane. No, I don't know if I can do that.
And then also Sylvester Stallone, who apparently is a huge Superman fan. They said he was too Italian, so he couldn't do it. Even though my brother and I agreed we would love to see a movie with him playing Superman.
Lois, we gotta fly out of here. You know, to obviously Rocky is in the same time frame. So,
right.
Yeah, man. How cool. I mean, I could picture, you know, he's too short, though. He has to wear lifts in his shoes. He's kind of like that Tom Cruise thing. He has to wear lifts in his shoes to make him look taller.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
No, he'd be like talking about General Zod. He'd be like, they drew first blood. So,
yo, Lois, I did it. I took down Zod. Yeah.
Let's see here. Oh, I love how they had little homages to other things. Like for one part where Christopher Reeve's trying to get inside the elevator and he's like, are we going down? And then the guy's like, no, going up, up, up. And when I saw that, I was like, that's pretty awesome. Okay. So one scene I wanted to talk about was like the scene when Lois, Superman finally actually get to talk. Like that scene, man, that's a lot of sexual tension in that
there,
scene.
She pulled off the consummate, if you will, seductress. And, you know, he flies in, she's wearing the sexy outfit. And right. Then one of her first questions is, well, can you tell me what underwear I'm wearing? And he's like, pink. And she goes, do you like pink? He's like, I happen to like pink.
right. She's the part where she's like, man, the whole time I'm watching that scene, I'm just like, man, like, she's just wanting to get on him. And so, I mean, who wouldn't, but it was funny. It was so like in your face at that one scene. I have a lot of different trivia on here, but I don't want to, I keep hogging the mic. So like, what do you want to talk about with this movie? Like, what are some parts that you really enjoy?
To this day, still the, one of the coolest now when you look at it, how cheesy the effect of it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's before he becomes Superman. He's still living there. And he, you know, the jocks and the cheerleaders make fun of him a little bit, except obviously Lana's still flirting with him and everything.
Right.
And he goes and punts the ball. And then he's like, he takes off running and you're watching, you know, you get the faster than a locomotive type thing, right. You know, but you see him running. And to this day, you know, when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, he's so fast. But as you get older and you watch it and you're just watching how the legs are just barely, you know, you can obviously tell he's on some kind of machine or something. It's just funny to me.
Right.
Again, it doesn't take away of any of the movie, but you're just like, you know, it's so cheesy. And then that is one of my favorite parts. And then obviously, Man of Steel portrayed it a lot more than this movie did, but I love just the short amount of time that you got with even in what was it was just literally like 5 minutes to me that he got with his dad with Jonathan, Gerald Ford, and you just got the feeling that there was a whole lot of love for him and his dad.
Yeah,
and I feel that, you know, and it just it was great, and but God, just watching him have the heart attack, and you know, it's always been that he needed something in his life to push him forward. His dad, you know, both dads, Jonathan had one voice reason. And like you mentioned it there at the, in your synopsis, Jonathan had one voice, which was the human voice, which was the, you're here for a reason. You're destined to do great things. Whereas Jor-El knew he was going to do that. Jor-El told him when he's going through the 12 years of education, he's like, your body's going to change. Everything's, you're going to be able to do this. You know, he's just like, I want you, and not so much rule. He's just like, you're going to be a God among men, and literally says that. And,
right.
And so I like that. And he knows what Jor-El wanted him to do, but to take on the persona of what his, you know, Jonathan, his human father, I think that speaks volumes of what Schuster and Siegel were trying to say in from the beginning of their books anyways.
Right.
It was always about, yes, he's an alien, but it's always been about him fitting in and being human.
Right.
And so I think you got that. And like I said, it's just a short snippet, maybe 5 minutes of the movie, but I feel like they nailed it in that 5 minutes of what it was supposed to be for him. So
no, I agree, man. That actually brings up a point that there was a little bit of drama, how Mario Puzo wrote the first screenplay and then they brought in the other screenwriters and they kind of cheesed it up.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching the movie this time. I love the opening where it's like the old time, like got the curtains roll back and then the black and white scene. And then all of a sudden you hear the John Williams theme slowly building up and then like, boom, it just hits. And like that, I was reading that like that opening sequence about just the credits flying by cost more than some of the movies that were being made at that time. Oh, like, yeah. So like that is an extremely memorable opening sequence of just the credits and get your blood pumping. Excellent score by John Williams. And it's serious. The movie's really serious when it starts and it stays serious up until he gets to 48 minutes in the movie when he gets to Metropolis. And then, it all of a sudden just doesn't warn you at all. And it goes into like, they amp up the cheesiness by like intentionally amp it up, yeah, like by like 50%. Cause you've got like Otis who's like bumbling around, Ned Beatty, super underrated actor. Love that guy. Such a good actor. Yeah. Great character actor. And then you've got
Mr. Luthor.
Right. And that just that whole that stuff. And then like when the mugger is gonna mug Lois Lane, and then Christopher Reeve, I keep saying Christopher Reeve, Superman is like kind of messing with him. Like in that scene now, I'm watching, I'm like, she's in harm's way. Like, just take care of her. And so like, but then it finally took me a while to get used to, oh wait, this is like cheesy now. This is like the old school.
You have
Superman.
To be the mild man. Yeah, you want to believe the mild mannered. Right. Goofiness that so no one believes that he's Superman, because right. even when he flew out of the this Fortress of Solitude, you really didn't get a good look at him being Christopher Reeve at that time. It's just right. kind of a real quick flyby. So yeah. You get the first look of Clark and you're like, all right, I mean, we all know the goofy, you're right, the cheesiness, and I love it. And I love that, you know, he slumped the shoulders and
right.
changes his posture and changes his voice and he fumbles and bumbles and that is what makes, again, for me, just the perfect Superman and the perfect Clark Kent, because
right,
you know, here he is, the mild mannered. Yeah, and I mean, you know, even Perry White says it right there. He's like, well, he's just a, you know, Lois teaching the ropes, he's real mild, you know, he's real mild mannered dude, and he's
kind right of, right,
you know, wishy-washy.
Which,
but
which I gotta say, like, just the comparison between Christopher Reeve and Henry Cavill as Clark Kent. Henry Cavill is still smoldering as Clark Kent. Like, it just like, I'm just like, come on, dude. Like, you look like you're in a 60s spy movie. Like, you're just that good looking, you know? And I like that Christopher Reeve intentionally like did everything he could to make himself forgettable as Clark Kent.
Yeah.
and kind of almost annoying, but like, and it's just like, that was awesome. I think the cheesiness, though, I'm assuming this, I don't know this for sure, maybe you can tell me, I think that the movie was more serious with Mario Puzo's version, and then they made the last half cheesier, which obviously worked at the time, 300 million. But for me, I was really enjoying the first 48 minutes of the movie. And then once they got to Metropolis, it was too cheesy for me for the rest of the movie.
Let's face it. DC Comics has always been dark. I mean, not like, it's always been a serious storytelling from Batman to Superman to, you know, Wonder Woman. All those stories have always been serious stories.
Yeah.
At least when they first started. So it's a little bit, I mean, I won't say it's off-putting. It's a little bit, I mean, it's very drastic. Like you said, the minute you could tell the minute
right
that it happens. And I wish there had been a little bit more lead up to it. I understand that the whole reason for some of the cheesiness, because they still wanted kids to be able to enjoy this movie. I think that, at least that's my opinion. I can't take gospel for that. There's some memorable moments because of that cheesiness. Like we said, with Ned Beatty and his character, to this day, one of my old bosses still does the Luthor, Mr. Luthor, you know, because he, you know, we say Lex Luthor,
right.
Otis is always walking around Luthor. But even in that cheesiness, they still had a part.
Yeah.
To show that, you know, Lex is just a bad dude. Like, you know, the cops that are chasing Otis through the subway, and then Otis goes in. They push the dude right out into oncoming train. So I think you get, I think to me, there was a well balance between still being serious and still having some of the comic book goofiness and cheesiness that they were still going for. Cause I think they still kind of wanted to use some of the campiness from the 66 or the 60s Batman TV show with Adam West. I think that not too campy, but just enough to, just in case they'd be like, well, you know, it's still friendly, because we got to keep this rating on it. And Puzo, but I would love to see an entire four movie Mario Puzo Superman to this day.
100%. Yeah, that would be, because
I think that would be, ladies and gentlemen, if you thought Superman didn't kill, he does, and Mario Puzo probably would have shown us that with
Superman writing. Superman would definitely have pulled the gun out of a toilet and like you know. hey, that's the Sylvester Stallone Superman movie right there.
It's there we go.
You
know,
the Godman, or the Superfather.
Hey, Sly, if you're listening, we're pitching it to you right now. So go ahead and take care of that for us.
You're not too old. You should do it right now.
Absolutely.
So we're starting to roll back on time. So we're going to need to go into like final thoughts. So is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, this is a movie we could talk about for a while, because we were just talking about Superman in general. Yeah. My final thoughts on this is just that, it's a 100% classic. If you like movies, you have to see this movie. Watch it for what it is, experience it for what it is, and just appreciate that, like, so much amazing art came because of this movie. This movie inspired so much art. And yeah, that's my thoughts on that. So what about yours?
My final thoughts are, stop worrying about DC and Marvel and just go enjoy the movies for what they are. Like you said, this movie brought us to the point where we even have DC and Marvel comments and talks. So again, enjoy the movie for what it is. It's a classic. It's a five-star movie in my book, and always will be. And I, even if I wasn't a Superman fan, this would definitely be, because again, whether they had, you know, problems in production, the cast is still a timeless cast to me, with Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman, like you said, Ned Beatty, and obviously Christopher Reeve. So there's some great, wonderful, go watch it. If you've never seen it, go enjoy it. It's not a super souped up powered Superman.
No, not a lot of fighting in the movie at all. I don't think there is fighting in this movie.
Just a lot of what you want in a Superman movie is to get you got the origin, you got the love story. And to this day, when that, like you were talking about with the score, I can turn it on and my girls immediately from that first few notes, my daughters go, Superman. So I raised my daughters, ladies and gentlemen. But no, that's my final thoughts. Just enjoy the movie. It's great. It's wonderful. Enjoy Superman 2 after that. You can do with Superman 3 and Superman 4 what you want, but Superman 1 and Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut.
Folks. That's another conversation, the Richard Donner cut and like all the time he put into that, just finally releasing it. So we have a rating system for four different things. Would you listen to a couple episodes? You're familiar with that, right? So, so rated that A through an F on, did it resonate? Like, do you think it was that it worked out when it first came out? Which that's kind of an obvious A+, I would say, like runaway A+. Hit. Yeah. Do you think that it still resonates today? Do you think it's?
I would give it on resonating today. I would give it a B just due to the amount of superhero movies that we have.
Right.
Like, I mean, you can still watch it and still enjoy it and still know that this is what led it up. But I give it a B on resonating today because of just the overabundance. If there was not a whole lot of superhero films, I think it would push right back up to an A.
Well, it kind of was up there until I want to say X-Men probably. Cause before that you either had Superman or you had Batman. Like Marvel wasn't doing crap.
Or some of those, direct to video or B-rated Marvel movies, you know.
Right.
I mean, and not to take anything away because I mean, there's still a lot of great movies out there.
Yeah, love for everybody. But I remember that specifically. If you like superhero movies before, I mean, X-Men came out, but it was really Spider-Man that like started the third wave. I think Superman was the first wave, Batman was the second, and then Spider-Man was the third wave, and then that moved into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. So before that, I give it a B as well, because it's still, unfortunately, it's not talked about, I feel like, as much, at least in my circles. But yeah, I mean, it's the number one for the first one, I would say, that like that really left a mark on the superhero genre. So let's do personal enjoyment.
A+. A+. if there's certain movies, if you're a movie buff, you know this. There's certain movies that you rewatch over and over and over again because you enjoy the movie so much. There is a set time of year that I watch all the Supermans.
Really?
All of them, all the Christopher Reeve. Yeah, there's a set time and it's every year. So I watch them and so it's still to this day is a pure enjoyment. So A+.
I love that. When do you do that? Is it like a Christmas thing or is it?
No, it's always in the summertime.
Okay.
It would normally it would be because it was around Christmas time when this movie came out in 1978.
Right.
But I have a Christmas tradition, some movies that I do that. And that's a little known franchise. Disney picked it up not too long ago. You know, nobody knows about it too much. Star Wars is my. Christmas time.
I think I've heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. You might, some people might have heard of it.
Isn't there like Vulcans or something in it?
Captain Kirk and
right. Captain Crunch, something like that. For me, personal enjoyment. Now, this is where I have issues with this movie, but I mean, it's not a perfect movie. Like we've talked about how much that we enjoy about it. I really, really liked the first 48 minutes of this movie a lot. I was like, wow, this is really, really good. And then when it got cheesy, it got a little too cheesy, too hokey for me. And I understand why they were doing it, but for me personally, I'm probably going to give it personal enjoyment. It's just for me, I'm going to probably give it a C because I don't think I'm going to revisit this movie very often. Now, like, I think that Christopher Reeve, I think he is the best Superman. I do agree. I didn't think that before rewatching it. I thought it was Henry Cavill, but now watching it, I'm like, no, I think it's still Christopher Reeve. But George Reeves, though, you know, he was my Superman growing up when I was a kid, because that was like one of the only things I was allowed to watch. But anyways, technically, Ben Affleck has played Superman, too. I didn't think about that with that Hollywood land when he played George Reeves in that.
Yep.
So he has played Superman and Batman. Interesting. And so the final one is it a midnight watch? Is that like if the movie's on, you're walking by and you're like, oh, it's Superman. Would you sit down and watch the rest of it?
Yes.
Okay. I would 100%.
100% A+. You what? And again, that's probably because I am a little biased, but
I mean, it's personal enjoyment though. Like, yeah. I mean, 100%. Like the movie, the character has had such a massive impact on your life. So I would be surprised if it wasn't a midnight watch for you personally.
It would always be a midnight watch.
Yeah. let's see. For me, unfortunately, it's not a midnight watch. There's different scenes in the movie. I would definitely watch the rest of that scene, but then I would probably go to bed. So I've got something a little bit new that I haven't done. We haven't done before, but knowing you, I've got a couple trivia questions. And so I was trying to be fair and like not look at ones that are like I had never heard of before. But then again, you are a massive Superman fan. Not only are you a massive Superman fan, you're a massive comic book fan. So, I mean, you have like DC probably tattooed on you somewhere, you know?
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. So I've got a couple questions here. I apologize. I haven't read your book yet. I meant to read it before having you on the show. But I was going to say, like, if you get enough of these right, I'll read the book. But I'm going to read the book anyways. So number one, what are the full names of Superman's mothers?
Laura Van El. Laura is his mother. And she is an L. And Van El. I want to say it's Laura Van El. And then you have Martha Clark Kent.
So it's Laura Van. Right. And the only time that they actually have that in the movies is in the credits of Man of Steel.
Man of Steel, yeah.
Right. Let's see here. I didn't know that. What does DC stand for?
Detective Comics.
Okay. There we go.
That's why you should never say DC Comics, because the C in the is
Detective Comics. Comics. Let's see. What was the very first comic that Superman was in?
Action Comics number one.
There we go. And that's like a super famous scene of him holding the car up. I didn't know that Superman had a dog, but what is Superman's dog's name?
Crypto.
Oh, you and me had a conversation about this next question, because we actually, somebody brought this in, I believe, to the Half Price Books. Who was Superman, or who did Superman fight first from the Marvel universe?
Who did he fight first from the Marvel? Would be his very first opponent was Spider-Man, because they wanted to play on the Marvel or Spider-Man hype at the time.
But oh, you mean like making the movie and the crossover at the time?
Are we talking about comics? Who did he fight first?
I was building this from comics.
Oh, yeah. It would be to my knowledge, it was Spider-Man. I may be wrong. It could be the Hulk, though.
Okay, so from what I understand, is it was the Hulk when they did the Amalgam or whatever those comics.
Okay, so you did have one comic before that where Superman and Spider-Man, and I have it somewhere. Maybe some other time we do a show, I'll break it out. But you did have Superman fight Spider-Man for a minute before they finally teamed up. But Amalgam Comics back in the early 90s or mid 90s, I should say. I want to say it was 94, 95-ish when Amalgam, where Marvel and DC combined together to make some outstanding characters, by the way. yes, it was the Hulk.
Okay. So see, I learned something there. I'm learning trivia right now. A couple more questions. What were Superman's original powers in the 1930s? Because he didn't have all the powers he has now.
They literally said it: faster than a speeding bullet. Mm-hmm. So he was fast, able to leap tall buildings with a single bound. So he could jump very far.
Right.
And he was bulletproof.
Right. And more powerful than a locomotive.
More powerful than locomotive. So he had strength, speed, he could jump very high, and he was bulletproof. It wasn't until the radio show, the radio serials, that he gained flight and other heat vision and x-ray vision and things of that nature.
That's awesome. They also, I know that he's had some pretty goofy powers that they've added.
Don't get me started on the thousands of powers that probably he should never have. But
right, like ventriloquism.
Super ventriloquism. He had
super dancing.
Telekinesis. He's had everything. But now I think he's right back where he needs to be.
Right.
I remember his flight vision.
I think you said earlier, like, they overpowered him and then they had to depower him for a while because it was getting harder and harder for people to write comics about him.
You write yourself into a corner where you can't. I mean, what kind of story are you going to tell if you've got the all powerful? So take something away from, I like that he's vulnerable to magic, because now you have lots of characters that can come in and beat him up. And I like that. So, yeah.
Which hopefully we'll see Black Adam sometime in this lifetime. We'll see if they ever make it.
I hope we see Shazam, Black Adam, and Superman fight, because that's a great story to tell.
Yes, I agree. I would really like to see that. How many type this I think this is correct. How many kinds of kryptonite are there?
There may be more than I know now.
You don't have to list them, but just like what's a number that you think?
I thought there was 7. There may be more than that now because you have so many different writers that want to give kryptonite. But I believe there's 7.
Apparently, there's 29.
Woo!
That's a lot. So I did not research it. I don't know if that's for sure, but that was something I was reading said there's 29.
Each one obviously, I knew there was black, green, red, silver, blue,
right? Gold.
There's a lot of them, and man, if there's that many now, I have to go do some. You actually stumped me. You actually stumped me on it. So,
okay, and then last one right here. No idea about this one, but which country made legal tender, like actual coins, money that have Superman on them? Like this is actually, you can spend this money.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Australia.
No, a little bit more north.
Sudan.
Way north, eh?
Oh, hey, Canada, eh?
Yeah,
that would not surprise me because of Joel Siegel. So
yeah, no way, eh? Oh, by the way, so I didn't realize this, but like Jor-El and Kal-El and all that's all Hebrew. Like that, like El means God and like means multiple different things. I did not ever know that before. So thank you for taking me up on doing this show because I was researching stuff. That's why I love doing this show, is because I'll pick a movie and then research it for a while. And I do that anyways. Like I just watched Halloween 2 and then I researched it for like 2 days. I'm not going to talk to anybody about it. It's just for personal enjoyment.
Best Halloween ever, by the way, is Halloween 2.
Halloween 2. Okay, maybe we need to have you on the show again soon.
You can have me whenever you want. Please let me know. But just think about the story. Just think of the storyline, and you'll see the resemblances to the Bible and the New Testament and the Old Testament. Certain things going on there. You know, Krypton being the heavens and the being the surviving sun.
Right,
and the powers that he has. So there's a lot of I'm trying to think of the literary word, but
like messianic type of
you'll see a lot of a mirroring of the Bible and things of that nature. So it's another great story. So
I think that's really cool because like these characters are modern Greek mythology right now. Yep. Like that's it 100% is like
every one of our superheroes absolutely 100% is our modern mythology. Yes.
Right. And I love that because like Spider-Man, for example, like with great power comes great responsibility, you know, like that's something I grew up hearing that. So I'm getting sidetracked again, but thank you so much, Dash, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Definitely check out your show, A Dash of Life, on YouTube. It's fantastic. You guys talk about football, comics. I watched something you guys were talking about, the Afghanistan war, I believe.
Yeah.
You have tons of connections, tons of friends. You're a super outgoing person. So you have tons of shows going all the time, like multiple shows. Like me, I just struggle to get one show out like twice a month now.
Yeah. I told you at the beginning, I am such an extroverted person where I need to have contact with talking with people. And a lot of being a military person, a lot of your friends move away.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to spend time with them now via Facebook or via, you know, the cameras and things is great. Like it's been, you know, months that we've seen each other and here we are face to face talking and having a great time. So I love it.
Cool. All right, man. I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for the show and we'll catch you later.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Invite me back anytime you want.
All right. That about wraps up today's episode. If you guys want to check out this movie, I watched it on Prime. I'm pretty sure Dash actually owns this movie. Special thanks to our sound producer, Jake Colvin. If you had as much fun as we did on this episode, we'd love it if you shared it with your family, friends, or anyone that you think that would like it. So please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast, found on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and many other platforms. Also, we'd love if you visited our Instagram or Facebook page and join the conversation on hashtag WhatsYourMidnightWatch. You can also directly reach us at themidnightwatchpodcast@gmail.com. That about does it, everybody. You have a fantastic week, and as always, keep up the watch.